new destination. Yow dokota lepp loy def ne yalla tax. Ho 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 lo xamni fi lañ koy ba jaru di jitt
Good morning, folks. You're listening to WGDR Plainfield, WGDH Hardwick, 91.1 FM and 91.7 FM on your dial. And it's Saturday morning, folks. Welcome to Amy's Kids Show. I am so happy to be here with you today on this beautiful Saturday morning. The sun is shining here in Vermont, and there's a little bit of mist around the hills, and everything's still green and beautiful, and the birds are so happy. So I hope you're having a great Saturday morning, and I'm very excited because this is the week that a lot of people have been waiting for. This is the week that we get to find out what a tesseract is. You see, here on Amy's Kids Show, we've been reading A Wrinkle in Time by Madeline L'Engle for the last, 4 weeks, I guess. And now we're up to chapter 5. And this is the exciting moment, folks, where we get to learn what is a tesseract. Now, whatever this tesseract thing is, it's been helping our friends Meg and Charles Wallace and Kelvin travel through time and space with their friends, Mrs. What's-It, Mrs. Who, and Mrs. Which. And so they've been having a really interesting time traveling through space. But how do they do it? Well, it has something to do with this tesseract. And so to understand the tesseract, we also have to use a certain part of our brain called our thinking brain. Now, we have three parts to our brain, and we've been learning about those on Amy's Kid Show. We learned about the reptile brain at the bottom of our skull, right close to our spine. That's the part that keeps us alive, right? That's the part that reptiles have. And then we have a mammal brain on top, which helps us have complicated mammal feelings or complicated emotions. And when we started the story, A Wrinkle in Time, we were learning about Meg and her complicated emotions, right? She's feeling left out of her mammal friend world at school. She's feeling like she's not part of the group, and that's part of those complicated mammal emotions, right? Well, today, we need to use our thinking brains. Did you ever put your thinking cap on when you were a kid, right? Or maybe you are a kid. Does your teacher still tell you to put your thinking cap on? Well, that's when you put your hands on the top of your head. That's where your thinking brain is. And you put your cap on. It's like a hat. And then you tie it down under your chin. Pretend it has two little strings that come down, and you have to tie them using your fingers under your chin, right? That's your thinking cap. Well, we're going to need our thinking caps today because we're going to be imagining shapes. And shapes are one of the special things that our thinking brain can imagine. That's why we can count and use numbers and letters and read and write and all that good stuff. What's the first number? Does anybody know? The number one. Well, what shape is the number one? It's a line, right? Well, you're off to a good start. We've woken up the thinking brains, guys. Now let's go have some fun. We're going to dance with a book.
If you want adventure, you want to unwind, pick up a good story, get out of that old grind and read a book.
Read, 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 read a book.
Read a book.
Read, 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 read a book.
If fun is what you're after or you're looking for laughter, read a book.
Read, 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 read a book.
If you've got a question, something's on your mind, reading is the answer. Be a mastermind. Read a book.
Read, 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 read a book.
Read a book.
Read, 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 read a book.
There is a way
bedtime, you cannot get to sleep. Reading is the answer. Why bother counting sheep? Read a book.
What kind of shape is your favorite shape? What kind of shape is it in? Is it flat? Is it round? Is it pointy or square? Is it long? Is it short? Is it thin? Whoa, what kind of shape is it in?
Joshua likes the shape of a spear, the shape of a basketball. But he broke all the rules when he bounced it one day and down tumbled Jericho's wall.
Leah, oh Leah, she likes sugar lumps, for they are the shape of a cube. And every day with her afternoon tea, she always says 10 lumps will do, thank you.
What kind of shape is your favorite shape? What kind of shape is it in? Is it flat, is it round, is it pointy or square? Is it long, is it short, is it thin? No, what kind of shape is it in?
A square has four sides that are all the same length. The square can be small or large.
Young Caleb observed,
if you use them for wheels, you probably won't go far. Brent has been waiting all day by an octagon sign at the end of the road. This A-sided shape is a stop sign, you see, and he's waiting for it to say go.
What kind of shape is your favorite shape? What kind of shape is it in? Is it flat? Is it round? Is it pointy or square? Is it long? Is it short? Is it thin? Whoa! What kind of shape is it in?
Well, Nate draws a zero or a donut, moon or a sun. But when he's done drawing, he can't quite remember which round thing he's drawn is which one.
Andrea plays in the symphony band,
and it seems to keep her amused.
She plays the triangle, a three-sided shape, and in between notes she will snooze.
What kind of shape is your favorite shape? What kind of shape is it in? Is it flat? Is it round? Is it pointy or square? Is it long? Is it short? Is it thin? Whoa! What kind of shape is it in?
Hey, wait! Yes, Jim! How come there are no two-sided shapes?
Ah, but there are. How about a boomerang?
Well, yeah. Well, what would you call that kind of shape?
You'd call it a boomerangle.
Hannah once made a big oval shape out of her favorite shoelace. She said, thank you, my dear. And what have we here? She said, either an egg or a face.
Don't sit on that square, my brother Monfer. You'll flatten it out, you see. Then the sides will no longer be all the same length, and a rectangle it will be. Whoopee!
What kind of shape is your favorite shape? What kind of shape is it in? Is it flat? Is it round? Is it pointy or square? Is it long? Is it short? Is it thin? Whoa! What kind of shape is it in?
Well, folks, welcome back. Have you been enjoying the shapes that we've been celebrating today? I really like that song. It was just like totally amazing magic that I found that song today, because that is perfect for our section of the story. We are learning about what a tesseract is. And a tesseract is actually a shape. I looked up the word tesseract in the dictionary, and here's what I found out. That the word tesseract comes from a couple of Greek words from Greece, ancient Greece. One is called, the first part of it is from tesseris. Tesseris, which means four, the number four. And actis, which means a ray or a beam, right? Or a projection of the number four. And so if we think about four, and we think about four sides, what shape do we get if we draw four lines and put them together? Well, we get a square or a cube, like the song was singing about, my favorite cube thing in the world that is shaped like a cube is a sugar cube, for sure. I remember those when I was growing up. Sugar cubes are square. Maybe you have a Rubik's cube at your house. You know what that is, right? That's square. That's a square that has more than two sides. It's actually three-dimensional. It actually pops off the paper, and you can hold it in your hands. And so it's got sides on all sides. And so it's pretty cool to play with shapes. And when we think about shapes, that's where that's a special thing that humans can understand. You know, we understand shapes. We look around the world and we see round shapes. We see flat shapes. We see all kinds of shapes with different sides, numbers of sides. And then we've taken those shapes and we've turned them into things like numbers, like the number one, which is the first shape, which is what? A line, right? And then we can take those numbers and we can also turn those into letters, like the letter I, which actually looks a lot like the number one, right? And so the letter I can be put together with other letters to make words. The number one can be put together with other numbers to make more numbers and to help us count and measure things. Well, these are all things, guys, that we are doing with our thinking brains. Only humans have these big thinking brains, and that's why we come up with all of these great ideas. Like we figure out that a round shape would make a better wheel than a square shape or a cube, right? Don't you think? I wonder how long it took to figure that out. Well, we probably had to figure out shapes first, right? So here we go. We're going to read chapter 5 called The Tesseract from A Wrinkle in Time by Madeline L'Engle. So the question in chapter 4 that we left off with, the cliffhanger from last week, is Meg is asking their friends, "That dark thing we saw," she said, "is that what my father is fighting?" Chapter 5, The Tesseract. "Yes," Mrs. Witch said. "He is behind into the darkness, so that even we cannot see him." Meg began to cry, to sob aloud, though through her tears she could see Charles Wallace standing there, very small, very white. Kelvin put his arms around her, but she shuddered and broke away, sobbing wildly. Then she was enfolded in the great wings of Mrs. What's-It, and she felt comfort and strength pouring through her. Mrs. What's-It was not speaking aloud, and yet through the wings Meg understood words. "My child, do not despair. Do you think we would have brought you here if there was no hope? We are asking you to do a difficult thing, but we are confident that you can do it. Your father needs help. He needs courage. And for his children, he may be able to do what he cannot do for himself." "Now, Mrs. Witch said, are we ready, Dee Dee?" "Where are we going?" Kelvin asked. Again, Meg felt an actual physical tingling of fear as Mrs. Witch spoke. "We must go be behind the shadow, Dodo." "But we will not do it all at once," Mrs. What's-It comforted them. "We will do it in short stages." She looked at Meg. "Now we will tesser. We will wrinkle again. Do you understand?" "No," Meg said flatly. Mrs. What's-It sighed. "Explanations are not easy when they are about things for which your civilization still has no words. Kelvin talked about traveling at the speed of light. You understand that, little Meg?" "Yes," Meg nodded. "That, of course, is the impractical long way around. We have learned to take shortcuts wherever possible." "Sort of like in math?" Meg asked. "Like in math," Mrs. What's-It looked over at Mrs. Who. Take your skirt and show them," she said. "La experiencia es la madre de la ciencia." "Spanish, my dears. Cervantes. Experience is the mother of knowledge." Mrs. Who took a portion of her white robe in her hands and held it tight. "You see," Mrs. What's-It said, "if a very small insect were to move from the section of skirt in Mrs. Who's right hand to that in her left, it would be quite a long walk for him if he had to walk straight across the fabric." Swiftly, Mrs. Who brought her hands, still holding the skirt, together. Now you see, Mrs. Whatsit said, he would be there without that long trip if he just walked across now. That is how we travel. She made a wrinkle in her skirt, do you understand? And then the ant could just walk from one side to the other and skip the middle. Charles Wallace accepted the explanation serenely. Even Calvin did not seem perturbed. Oh, dear, Meg sighed. I guess I am a moron. I just don't get it. That is because you think of space only in three dimensions, Mrs. Whatsit told her. We travel in the fifth dimension. This is something you can understand, Meg. Don't be afraid to try. Was your mother able to explain a tesseract to you? Well, she never did, Meg said. She got so upset about it. Why, Mrs. Whatsit? She said it had something to do with her and father. It was a concept they were playing with, Mrs. Whatsit said, going beyond the fourth dimension to the fifth. Did your mother explain it to you, Charles? Well, yes, Charles looked a little embarrassed. Please don't be hurt, Meg. I just kept at her while you were at school till I got it out of her. Meg sighed. Just explain it to me. Okay, Charles said. What is the first dimension? Well, a line. Straight, and she drew a line in the air with her finger. Okay, and the second dimension? Well, you'd square the line. A flat square would be in the second dimension. And she drew a square in the air with her finger. And the third dimension? Asked Charles. Well, you would square the second dimension. Then the square wouldn't be flat anymore. It would have a bottom and sides and a top. It would be a cube. And the fourth dimension? Charles asked. Well, I guess if you want to put it into mathematical terms, you'd square the square. But you can't take a pencil and draw it the way you can the first three. I know it's got something to do with Einstein and time. I guess maybe you could call the fourth dimension time. That's right, Charles said. Good girl. Okay, then, for the fifth dimension, you'd square the fourth, wouldn't you? I guess so. Well, the fifth dimension's a tesseract. You add that to the other four dimensions, and you can travel through space without having to go the long way around. In other words, to put it into Euclid or old-fashioned plane geometry, a straight line is not the shortest distance between two points. For a brief, illuminating second, Meg's face had the listening, probing expression that was so often seen on Charles's face. I see, she cried. I got it. Just for a moment, I got it. I can't possibly explain it now, but there for a second, I saw it. She turned excitedly to Calvin. Did you get it? He nodded. Enough. I don't understand it the way Charles Wallace does, but enough to get the idea. So na now, wee, go, Mrs. Witch said. There is not all the time in the world. Could we hold hands? Meg asked. Calvin took her hand and held it tightly in his. You can try, Mrs. Whatsit said, though I'm not sure how it will work. You see, though we travel together, we travel alone. We will go first and take you afterwards in the backwash. That may be easier for you. As she spoke, the great white body began to waver and the wings to dissolve into mist. Mrs. Who seemed to evaporate until there was nothing but the glasses, and then the glasses, too, disappeared. It reminded Meg of the Cheshire Cat. I've often seen a face without glasses, she thought, but glasses without a face? I wonder if I go that way, too, first me and then my glasses? She looked over at Mrs. Witch. Mrs. Witch was there, and then she wasn't. There was a gust of wind and a great thrust and a sharp shattering as she was shoved through what? Then darkness, silence, nothingness. If Kelvin was still holding her hand, she could not feel it. But this time, she was prepared for the sudden and complete disillusion of her body. When she felt the tingling coming back to her fingertips, she knew that this journey was almost over, and she could feel again the pressure of Kelvin's hand about hers. Without warning, coming as a complete and unexpected shock, she felt a pressure she had never imagined, as though she were being completely flattened out by an enormous steamroller. This was far worse than the nothingness had been. While she was nothing, there was no need to breathe. But now her lungs were squeezed together so that, although she was dying for want of air, there was no way for her lungs to expand and contract to take in the air that she must have every second to stay alive. This was completely different from the thinning of atmosphere when they flew up in the mountains, and she had had to put the flowers to her face in order to breathe. Remember that last week, guys? She tried to gasp, but a paper doll can't gasp. She thought she was trying to think, but her flattened-out mind was as unable to function as her lungs. Her thoughts were squashed along with the rest of her. Her heart tried to beat. It gave a knife-like, sidewise movement, but it could not expand. But then she seemed to hear a voice, or if not a voice, at least words. Words flattened out, like printed words on paper. "Oh, no! We can't stop here. This is a two-dimensional planet, and the children can't manage here." She was whizzed into nothingness again, and nothingness was wonderful. She did not mind that she could not feel Kelvin's hand, that she could not see or feel or be. The relief from the intolerable pressure was all she needed. Then the tingling began to come back to her fingers, her toes. She could feel Kelvin holding her tightly. Her heart beat regularly. Blood coursed through her veins. Whatever had happened, whatever mistake had been made, it was over now. She thought she heard Charles Wallace saying, his words round and full as spoken words ought to be, "Really, Mrs. Witch, you might have killed us." This time, she was pushed out of the frightening fifth dimension with a sudden, immediate jerk. There she was, herself again, standing with Kelvin beside her, holding on to her hand for dear life, and Charles Wallace in front of her, looking indignant. Mrs. What's-It, Mrs. Who, and Mrs. Which were not visible, but she knew that they were there. The fact of their presence was strong about her. "Children, and I apologize, came Mrs. Witch's voice. "Now, Charles, calm down," Mrs. What's-It said, appearing not as the great and beautiful beast she had been when they last saw her, but in her familiar wild garb of shawls and scarves and the old tramp's coat and hat. "You know how difficult it is for her to materialize. If you are not substantial yourself, it's very difficult to realize how limiting protoplasm is." "I am sorry, Mrs. Witch's voice came again, but there was more than a hint of amusement in it. "It is not funny," Charles Wallace gave a childish stamp of his foot. Mrs. Who's glasses shone out, and the rest of her appeared more slowly behind them. "We are such stuff as dreams are made on," she smiled broadly. "Prospero in the Tempest. I do like that play." "You didn't do it on purpose," Charles demanded. "Oh, my darling, of course not," Mrs. What's-It said quickly. "It was just a very understandable mistake. It's very difficult for Mrs. Witch to think in a corporeal way. She wouldn't hurt you deliberately, you know that. And it's really a very pleasant little planet and rather amusing to be flat. We always enjoy our visits there." "Where are we now, then?" Charles Wallace demanded. "And why?" "In Orion's belt. We have a friend here, and we want you to have a look at your own planet." When are we going home? Meg asked anxiously. What about Mother? What about the twins? They'll be terribly worried about us. When we didn't come home at bedtime, well, Mother must be frantic by now. She and the twins and Fort will have been looking and looking for us, and of course we aren't there to be found. Now don't worry, my pet, Mrs. Whatsit said cheerfully. We took care of that before we left. Your mother has had enough to worry her, with you and Charles to cope with, and not knowing about your father, without our adding to her anxieties. We took a time wrinkle as well as a space wrinkle. It's very easy to do if you just know how. What do you mean? Meg asked plaintively. Please, Mrs. Whatsit, it's all so confusing. Just relax and don't worry over things that needn't trouble you, Mrs. Whatsit said. We made a nice, tidy little time tesser, and unless something goes terribly wrong, we'll have you back about 5 minutes before you left. So there'll be no time to spare, and nobody'll ever even need to know that you were gone at all, though, of course, you'll be telling your mother, dear lamb, that she is. And if something goes terribly wrong, it won't matter whether we ever get back at all. Don't frighten them, Mrs. Witch's voice came. Are you losing faith? Oh, no, I'm not. But Meg thought her voice sounded a little faint. I hope this is a nice planet, Calvin said. We can't see much of it. Does it ever clear up? Meg looked around her, realizing that she had been so breathless from the journey and the stop on the two-dimensional planet that she had not noticed her surroundings. And perhaps this was not very surprising, for the main thing about the surroundings was exactly that they were unnoticeable. They seemed to be standing on some kind of nondescript, flat surface. The air around them was gray. It was not exactly fog, but she could see nothing through it. Visibility was limited to the nicely definite bodies of Charles Wallace and Kelvin, the rather unbelievable bodies of Mrs. Whatsit and Mrs. Who, and a faint occasional glimmer that was Mrs. Witch. Come, children, Mrs. Whatsit said. We don't have far to go, and we might as well walk. It will do you good to stretch your legs a little. As they moved through the grayness, Meg caught an occasional glimpse of slag-like rocks. But there were no traces of trees or bushes. Nothing but flat ground under their feet. No sign of any vegetation at all. Finally, ahead of them, there loomed what seemed to be a hill of stone. As they approached it, Meg could see that there was an entrance that led into a deep, dark cavern. "Are we going in there?" she asked nervously. "Don't be afraid," Mrs. Whatsit said. "It's easier for the happy medium to work within." "Oh, you'll like her, children. She's very jolly. If ever I saw her looking unhappy, I would be very depressed myself. As long as she can laugh, I'm sure everything is going to come out right in the end." Mrs. Whatsit, came Mrs. Witch's voice severely. Just because you are very young is no excuse for talking too much. Mrs. Whatsit looked hurt, but she subsided. Just how old are you? Kelvin asked her. Just a moment. Mrs. Whatsit murmured and appeared to calculate rapidly upon her fingers. She nodded triumphantly. Exactly 2,379,152,497 years, 8 months, and 3 days. That is, according to your calendar, of course, which even you know isn't very accurate. She leaned closer to Meg and Kelvin and whispered, "It was really a very great honor for me to be chosen for this mission. It's just because of my verbalizing and materializing is so good, you know. But, of course, we can't take any credit for our talents. It's how we use them that counts. And I make far too many mistakes. That's why Mrs. Who and I enjoyed seeing Mrs. Witch make a mistake when she tried to land you on a two-dimensional planet." It was that we were laughing at, not at you. She was laughing at herself, you see. She's really terribly nice to us younger ones. Meg was listening with such interest to what Mrs. Watsit was saying that she hardly noticed when they went into the cave. The transition from grayness of outside to the grayness of inside was almost unnoticeable. She saw a flickering light ahead of them, ahead and down, and it was toward this that they went. As they drew closer, she realized that it was a fire. "It gets very cold in here," Mrs. Watsit said, "so we asked her to have a good bonfire going for you." As they approached the fire, they could see a dark shadow against it. And as they went closer still, they could see that the shadow was a woman. She wore a turban of beautiful pale mauve silk and a long, flowing purple satin gown. In her hands was a crystal ball into which she was gazing raptly. She did not appear to see the children, Mrs. What's-It, Mrs. Who, and Mrs. Which, but continued to stare into the crystal ball. And as she stared, she began to laugh. And she laughed and laughed at whatever it was that she was seeing. Mrs. Witch's voice rang out clear and strong, echoing against the walls of the cavern, and the words fell with a sonorous clang. "We are here." The woman looked up from the ball, and when she saw them, she got up and curtsied deeply. Mrs. What's-It and Mrs. Who dropped small curtsies in return, and the shimmer seemed to bow slightly. "Oh, medium dear," Mrs. What's-It said, "these are our children, Charles Wallace Murray." I'm sorry, "these are the children, Charles Wallace Murray," Charles Wallace bowed. "Margaret Murray." Meg felt that if Mrs. What's-It and Mrs. Who had curtsied, she ought to also. So she did, rather awkwardly. "And Kelvin O'Keefe." Kelvin bobbed his head. "We want them to see their home planet," Mrs. What's-It said. The medium lost the delighted smile she had worn till then. "Oh, why must you make me look at unpleasant things when there are so many delightful ones to see?" Again, Mrs. Witch's voice reverberated through the cave. There will no longer be so many pleasant things to look at if responsible people do something about the unpleasant ones. The medium sighed and held the ball high. "Look, children," Mrs. What's-It said, "look into it well." "Que la terre est petite à qui la voit de si haut." Delisle. "How small is the earth to him who looks from heaven," Mrs. Who intoned musically. Meg looked into the crystal ball, at first with caution, then with increasing eagerness, as she seemed to see an enormous sweep of dark and empty space, and then galaxies swinging across it. Finally, they seemed to move in closer on one of the galaxies. "Our own Milky Way," Mrs. What's-It whispered to Meg. They were headed directly toward the center of the galaxy. Then they moved off to one side. Stars seemed to be rushing at them. Meg flung her arm up over her face as though to ward off the blow. "Look," Mrs. Witch commanded. Meg dropped her arm. They seemed to be moving in toward a planet. She thought she could make out polar ice caps, and everything seemed sparkling clear. "No, medium, no, dear. That's Mars," Mrs. What's-It reproved gently. "Do I have to?" the medium asked. "No, Mrs. Witch commanded. The bright planet moved out of their vision. For a moment, there was the darkness of space, then another planet. The outlines of this planet were not clean and clear. It seemed to be covered with a smoky haze. Through the haze, Meg thought she could make out the familiar outlines of continents, like pictures in her social studies books. Is it because of our atmosphere that we can't see properly? She asked anxiously. No, my mag. You know that it is not the atmosphere, Mrs. Witch said. You must be brave. It's the thing, Charles Wallace cried. It's the dark thing we saw from the mountain peak on Uriel when we were riding on Mrs. What's-Its back. Did it just come? Meg asked in agony, unable to take her eyes from the sickness of the shadow which darkened the beauty of the earth. Did it just come while we've been gone? Mrs. Witch's voice seemed very tired. Tell a little her, she said to Mrs. What's-It. Mrs. What's-It sighed. No, Meg, it hasn't just come. It has been there for a great many years. That is why your planet is such a troubled one. But why? Kelvin started to ask, his voice croaking harshly. Mrs. What's-It raised her hand to silence him. We showed you the dark thing on Uriel first, oh, for many reasons. First, because the atmosphere on the mountain peaks there is so clear and thin that you could see it for what it is. And we thought it would be easier for you to understand if you saw it, well, someplace else first, not on your own Earth. I hate it, Charles Wallace cried passionately. I hate the dark thing. Mrs. What's-It nodded. Yes, Charles, dear, we all do. That's another reason we wanted to prepare you on Uriel. We thought it would be too frightening for you to see it first of all on your own beloved world. But what is it? Kelvin demanded. We know that it's evil, but what is it? You have said it, Mrs. Witch's voice rang out. It is evil. It is the powers of darkness. But what's going to happen? Meg's voice trembled. Oh, please, Mrs. Witch, tell us what's going to happen. We will continue to fight. Something in Mrs. Witch's voice made all three of the children stand straighter, throwing back their shoulders with determination, looking at the glimmer that was Mrs. Witch with pride and confidence. And we're not alone, you know, children, came Mrs. What's-It, the comforter. All through the universe it's being fought, all through the cosmos, and my, but it's a grand and exciting battle. I know it's hard for you to understand about size, how there's very little difference in the size of the tiniest microbe and the greatest galaxy. You think about that, and maybe it won't seem so strange to you that some of our very best fighters have come right from your own planet. And it's a little planet, dears, out on the edge of a little galaxy. You can be proud that it's done so well. Who have our fighters been? Kelvin asked. Oh, you must know them, dear, Mrs. What's-It said. Mrs. Who's spectacles shone out at them triumphantly. And the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. Jesus, Charles Wallace said. Why, of course, Jesus. Of course, Mrs. What's-It said. Go on, Charles, love. There were others. All your great artists. They've been lights for us to see by. Leonardo da Vinci, Kelvin suggested tentatively. And Michelangelo? And Shakespeare, Charles Wallace called out. And Bach, and Pasteur, and Madame Curie, and Einstein. Now Kelvin's voice rang with confidence. And Schweitzer, and Gandhi, and Buddha, and Beethoven, and Rembrandt, and St. Francis. Now you, Meg, Mrs. What's-It ordered. Oh, Euclid, I suppose. Meg was in such an agony of impatience that her voice grated irritably. And Copernicus. But what about Father? Please, what about Father? We are going to your father, Mrs. Witch said. But where is he? Meg went over to Mrs. Witch and stamped as though she were as young as Charles Wallace. Mrs. What's-It answered in a voice that was low but quite firm. On a planet that is given in, so you must prepare to be very strong. The end of chapter 5. All right, so that's another cliffhanger, folks. We're going to get back to some great music. We are celebrating the thinking brain, and we're celebrating shapes and numbers and reading and letters and all the things that our thinking human brains can do, like imagine shapes. So we've got some counting songs coming up, guys. Thanks for joining me for Amy's Kids Show. Let's keep having fun.
Friends are asleep. Let's surprise them with this song. There were 10 in the bed, and the little one said, roll over, roll over. So they all rolled over, and one fell out. There were 9 in the bed, and the little one said, roll over, roll over. So they all rolled over, and one fell out. There were 8 in the bed, and the little one said, roll over, roll over. So they all rolled over and one fell out. There were 7 in the bed and the little one said, roll over, roll over. So they all rolled over and one fell out. There were 6 in the bed and the little one said, roll over, roll over. So they all rolled over and one fell out. There were 5 in the bed and the little one said, roll over, roll over. So they all rolled over and one fell out. There were 4 in the bed and the little one said, roll over, roll over. So they all rolled over and one fell out. There were 3 in the bed and the little one said, roll over, roll over. So they all rolled over and one fell out. There were 2 in the bed and the little one said, roll over, roll over. So they all rolled over and one fell out. There was 1 in the bed and the little one said,
say goodbye for now with this special song just for you. Twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are. Up above the world so high, like a diamond in the sky. Twinkle, twinkle, little star, measure what you are. When the blazing sun is gone, when he nothing shines upon, then you show your little light. Twinkle, twinkle all the night. Twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are. Then the traveler in the dark thanks you for your tiny spark. He could not see which way to go if you did not twinkle so. Twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are.
Kelly, you had a wonderful counting rhyme for us about 1, 2, buckle my shoe. So I wonder if you would recite it, and we'll just listen to you for a minute, all right?
1, 2, buckle my shoe. 3, 4, knock on the door. 5, 6, pick up sticks. 7, 8, lay them straight.
And then what comes after that? 9?
9, 10.
What?
A big fat hen.
Fine. All right. Now, you heard what she said. You think we could, maybe you could teach it to us now. All right, I'll try to do it with Kelly. All right, here we go.
1, 2, buckle my shoe. 3, 4, knock on the door. 5, 6, pick up sticks. 7, 8, lay them straight. 9, 10,
a big fat hen. All right, we'll do it once more. We'll do it once more, and then when we get to the big fat hen, we're going to say, a big fat hen, so we'll have a big sound in our voices, all right? Last time this time, all right?
1, 2, buckle my shoe. 3, 4, knock on the door. 5, 6, pick up sticks. 7, 8, lay them straight. 9, 10,
a big fat hen. All right, thank you, Kelly.
To shout or pout about the day you had. You dropped your lunch on the way to school. Your books at the bottom of the swimming pool. Your blocks fell in a pile. Play it cool, really cool. you want to shout or pout about the day ahead. If you're about to lose your cool, you have got a cool down tool. Don't let your nerves go wild, play it cool, really cool.
Count to ten and try again.
Folks, welcome back. We are at the end of Amy's Kids Show, and boy, we've been having some fun. I really like dancing around to that count to 10 song and doing a lot of counting and things. We've had our thinking caps on today for a Saturday morning. Boy, we hit the ground running today on Amy's Kids Show, putting that thinking cap on, thinking with our thinking brains, our human brains, imagining shapes in our mind, and then being able to put them together and spin them around in our minds. Wow. And then taking those shapes and making them into letters and numbers, and then being able to write things down and then have people come along long, long time later and look at those shapes and make sense out of them. Guys, this is an amazing, amazing human trait, and it only gets better with practice. And in fact, we do need to practice using our thinking brains. And some good ways to practice are to notice shapes and start learning about shapes and learning about numbers and learning about letters and reading, of course, and stories. Stories like the one that we're reading right now, A Wrinkle in Time, which tells us about life, right? And it tells us, well, in this case, it's an imaginary story. It's not real. Meg and Charles Wallace and Kelvin aren't real people, and neither are all their Mrs. friends. and they aren't really, we can't really travel through space and time, but we can imagine, right? And it's those kinds of stories and that kind of imagination and creative thinking which can help us make sense out of the world we do live in, right? Because we do still have shapes around here that we need to deal with, and time and space that we need to deal with, and problems that we need to deal with, and complicated mammal emotions and mammal feelings, like wanting to be part of the group or feeling left out or trying to find your friends. And I know a lot of folks are going through that right now, so I wish all you mammals out there the best of luck with your hearts full of love. And take a count to 10 and try again is my advice. And do some stretching or do some nice breathing and do some relaxing. And if you're angry, talk about it, right? These are all ways that we can cope with those complicated mammal emotions. So I hope you're enjoying Amy's Kids Show and A Wrinkle in Time. We're going to keep going next week and have more of that and keep going through the story on to chapter 6. So I'm pretty excited for that one because we did get left on a cliffhanger. And don't worry, folks, it's going to be a great, fabulous ending, because when Meg and her friends save their father, I mean, what would be a more amazing party than that, right? It's going to be the most amazing feeling when they succeed, and they will, guys. And so will you. You know why? Because you're the greatest. Take care. Have a happy Saturday. I'm thinking of all of you with my thinking brain and sending you the best. See you next week.